So we're here on Daf Lamed Beis Lamed Beis. The Mishnah tells us that a lulav has to be three tefachim, and the Mishnah also gives an explanation for that. Why does the lulav have to be three tefachim? Says the Mishnah, kidei l'naneabo, for the purpose of nanuim. The Gemara is going to change the Mishnah slightly by adding one letter. Which letter? A vav, right? Just the letter vav. And ukidei l'naneabo, meaning above the three tefachim, we're going to need an extra tefach, kidei l'naneabo, which means that the lulav has to rise above the aravos, the hadasim, and the aravos by one tefach. That's going to be the final conclusion with regard to the shear, the length of a lulav. So we're going to need four tefachim. Now, exactly what those tefachim look like, we're not sure, because if we take the classical Amma, which is called the Amma Beninus, and then we can produce by dividing it up into six parts, we get the Tefach Benini. So each Tefach is 1/6 of an Amma. But there are other ways of divvying it up, as we'll see Rabbi Tarfon, and they're going to produce a different kind of a Tefach. A Tefach Gadol, a Tefach Katan. So we're not sure exactly which Tefachim the Mishnah is referring to when it says Shlosha Tefachim. And we're going to see this again in the Braisa that the Gemara is going to quote here soon, that the Braisa is going to say that the Hadas and the Arav require Shlosha Tefachim and the Lulav requires Arba Tefachim. So now we're going to have to ask two questions. We're going to have to ask one question about the size of the Tefach with regard to the three Tefachim which are common to all the Minim except the Esrog, of course, by Min Hadas, Arava, and Lulav. What are those three Tefachim? What Tefach are we dealing with? Are we operating with? And then we have to ask a second question. The lulav needs an extra tefach, and that's codified here in the Braisa. Is that extra tefach the same tefach as the tefachim that make up the three tefachim? In other words, can we break down the lulav into two parts in essence? One part are the three tefachim, which are common to all the minim, and then the extra tefach is a different kind of a tefach. And that's going to be the subject if you got to the Tosus Dibra Maskel Tsei, which is on this page I gave out for today. I don't know if anybody saw the Tosus Tsei. So let's just go through the Gemara very quickly. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. So we have a tradition of Shmuel. We're going to soon have a tradition of Rabbi Yochanan. And an afkamina between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan could be a serious one in terms of the size, the length of the lulav. Because on the one hand, Shmuel is going to require a four tefachim lulav from head to toe, so to speak, whereas Rabbi Yochanan is going to require the four tefachim in the shidra itself, which means that the anafim that go above the shidra will end up producing a very, very tall lulav. I mean, relative to Shmuel's lulav. So in essence, Rabbi Yochanan is more machmir in the fact that he requires a lulav that's made up of a shidra, and the shidra itself is made up of has to be four tefachim high, correct? So let's see that inside. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that the shear of hadas va'arav shlosha lulav arba kidei shiyeh lulav yotze min hadas tefach. So the lulav extends beyond the hadas by one tefach. That's going to be true even according to Rabbi Yochanan. So the only chiddush really of Rabbi Yehuda, the name of Shmuel, is the word lulav. Because what does the word lulav mean? Does it mean the shidra or the entire lulav?
Sorry.
The entire lulav. Is that clear? So again, the word lulav, which we're going to see in the Braisa in a minute, and here we see it in Shmuel, means the entire lulav. I call it from head to toe. What I mean is including the anafim that go above the shidra. So that, in a sense, is a kula, because from head to toe, all you require in the lulav is four tefachim, according to Shmuel. Rav Parnach Amar Rav Yochanan, he was a Talmud of Rav Yochanan, and he quoted his Rebbe as saying, Shidra shalulav tzarech sheyetzim in adas tefach. Even the shidra itself has to be four tefachim high, so that it's the shidra itself is one tefach higher than the hadasim and the aravos. Is that so? That's Rav Yochanan, correct? The Gemara is not happy. I would use the phrase, the Gemara, the Makshan, is not a happy camper. But my question to you is, Is he coming to attack one of these two shitas? And if so, which one? Or is he coming to attack both? Let's take a look.
Both.
Lulav, or you're anticipating that in the line. I mean, giving up all the secrets here. Yeah. Okay, it's all right. Lulav, sheyesh bo gevul tefachim, kidei l'naneh bo kosher. The Mishnah requires that the lulav be how much? Three tefachim. Now, according to Shmuel, it has to be four tefachim. According to Rav Yochanan, it has to be four tefachim. Everybody agrees it has to be four tefachim. Could it be that both Shmuel and Rav Yochanan are both on the wrong side of the page, and the Mishnah contradicts both Shmuel and Rav Yochanan? That's a kash on both of them. How do we reconcile the Mishnah with either Rav Yochanan or Shmuel? I mean, you can take your choice, but somehow you're going to have to reconcile it with both of them to produce a shear of four tefachim.
Is this a different Mishnah?
That's our Mishnah. Let's go back to our Mishnah just to refresh our memory. The Mishnah at the end of this entire presentation about all the psulim of lulav tells you, well, what's kosher about a lulav. But it also tells you, in effect, what's possible about a lulav if it doesn't have the shear. Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tefachim kidei l'naneh bo kosher. So clearly the Mishnah is identifying the shear of a lulav as three tefachim and not as Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan would have it four tefachim. So the Gemara says, in order to reconcile our Mishnah with both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, we have to add one letter. Just Ema usually means let's change the girsa. U kidei l'naneh bo. U means in addition, we need X kidei l'naneh bo. The Mishnah doesn't actually spell out how tall that X is and what the shear is, but we need a shear of nanuim, and that shear of nanuim the Gemara identifies as a tefach. So it means whether or not you accept Shmuel or Rabbi Yochanan, or you accept Rabbi Yochanan, it doesn't matter. You're going to have to add the extra letter Vav. Ukideh. Now, don't ask me a historical question. This is for the university professors of Talmud. How did that Vav get lost? I don't know the answer to that question. But somehow in transmission, the Vav got dropped. Nowadays, by the way, you should know, and this is especially important in Zrayim, they have new publications, editions of the Mishnayos, and in brackets, they tell you, based on ancient manuscripts, what letters we have to add or subtract. You know, those are the scientific editions of the Mishnayos. But in this case, a scientific edition of our Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak would have, in brackets, the Vav. It would be in brackets because the Gemara assumed that there was no Vav, but the Gemara finally concluded that we have to add the Vav. Ukidei l'naneh bo kosher. Rabosai, if you were writing the Mishnah with the Vav, okay, I'm granting you the girsas of Vav, how would you have written the Mishnah? Now, I ask this as a pedagogic kind of question to lead to a discussion. How would you have formulated the Mishnah? By show of hands. Anybody here want to raise their hand and offer a different presentation? You know, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was probably the greatest literary scholar that we had. Daniil, how would you alter the Mishnah and make it even... Exactly. Why not just tell me that a lulav has to have arba tefachim? And one approach could be that, you know, Rebbe was too much of a lamdan. You know, he wanted to tell you, you should know, why is it, I have to answer the question, that the lulav has to have four tefachim, when Nadas and the Aravos only have to, in the next mission, have to have three tefachim. And he gives you an answer that you should have a havana. You know, which would prove, by the way, that Rebbe, when he wrote the Mishnais, was not only interested in the halacha l'maisa, he wasn't codifying the halacha, and that's it. He would have told me that the lulav has to be four tefachim, geendik l'maisa, finito. And that would have been a complete halacha. But no, he wants to tell you more. The lulav really fundamentally shares the same quality, essentially, as the hadasim and the aravas, and therefore it should be three tefachim. But you have to add another tefach. And why? You know, that if he had told me four tefachim, I would never have a clue. But tamvinoti zev, ma pitom shatam mosif tefach. Lama tzarich losif tefach gabei lulav? There's no logic behind it. And the answer is kidei l'naneh. So one thing is clear, the Nanuim is related to what? Which of the four meanim play the major role in Nanuim? Yeah, if you have to put a big nun on the sweatshirt, which one of the four meanim would have the big nun on his sweatshirt? The lulav. The lulav is so critical with regard to Nanuim that it requires an extra tefach. It has to tower above the other meanim by an extra tefach. Daniel? What were you saying? But I would like to go even one step further. Not only is Rebbe telling me something in Lavdus, meaning conceptually I have to understand why, what's the answer to the question why the lulav has to have this extra tefach, but he may be even telling me something halachic, something al pi din. And I base myself on this Tosus Dibra Maskel Tzeh. Tosus quotes a braisa in Masechta Nida. Do you see it towards the end of the Tosus Dibra Maskel Tzeh? It's about three lines up from the end of the Tosus. And Tosus says that the extra tefach of the luav, and the three key words, if you want to underline this, I don't know if you write in your gemaras, that's up to you, but I write with a pencil. But then if I don't have a pencil, I write with a pen. I'm from the modern school. But sometimes I feel that I have to underline something because it helps me, especially if I teach a class and I want to focus on a few words and I don't want to spend the time finding them, but locating them, so I underline it. So I would underline in this case, which I didn't do here because this belongs to the ELC, I would have underlined the words Eino Shavel Acherin. What is Tosfos to say about the Tefach of the Lulav?
It's different than the others.
It's different than the others. The other three tefachim of the lulav, like the aravos and the adasim that have three tefachim, are made up of what kind of tefach? Did you learn the sugya? I'm testing you.
Right.
Tefach beinoni, correct? But the lulav has a fourth tefach, and the braisa nida identifies this fourth tefach as being different than the other tefachim. In other words, whereas the three tefachim basic with regard to all the three meaning have three tefachim. That's Tefach Beinani, the fourth Tefach of a Lulav, and here the Braisa Nid is against Rashi, has to be a different Tefach. I'm not sure which Tefach it is. It might be a Tefach Katan, it might be a Tefach Gadol. That Tosus doesn't answer. But nevertheless, it's a different shear of Tefach. You know, we're operating with a different Tefach. That extra Tefach might be one-fifth larger than the Tefach Beinani, it might be one-fifth smaller than the Tefach Beinani. But whatever it is, it's a different tefach. And that's what Tosus says here, tefach de lulav, the extra tefach of a lulav, eino shavel achir, it's not the same tefach as the other three tefach. So Rabosai, now, by divvying up the lulav into three and one, which is what Rebbe did, instead of giving us, you know, four tefachim, Rebbe is teaching us a halacha. Again, if you hold like this, Bryson, Masech Denita, that if Rebbe had said four tefachim, what mistaken conclusion would you have come to? That all four tefachim are tefachim beinanim, and they're all equal, they're identical. But now that Rebbe divided up the four tefachim and the lulav into two categories, he's got the three tefachim, which are identical to the three tefachim of the aravos and adasim. He's got the fourth tefach, which is tefach acherim, it's a different kind of a tefach. Therefore, he wants to make sure that we know that that fourth tefach has a different status. Okay? Can anybody try to conceptualize what conclusion we have to derive here from this fourth tefach being a different tefach than the other three? I need you to think abstractly here, you know, think in abstract terms. Well, I wouldn't say it's a different mitzvah. You know, that's hard to say, but is the essence of the fourth tefach identical with the essence of the three tefach? Obviously not. It's a different tefach, so it must be essentially different. But then the rational mind wants to understand, well, what's the three tefach and what's the extra tefach?
Three tefach would be hadar, and the fourth tefach would be la'naneah.
Good, I accept the safer of what you say, Avi. I just want to polish up the ratio, if you don't mind. No, the fourth tefach is definitely, as Mitch said, and Avi says, is nanuin. It's halacha nanuin. Okay, you have to have a lulav which has the minimum shear to be makayim, the mitzvah of nanuin. And what is that? The extra tefach. So that tefach is identified with nanuin. What are the first three tefachim identified with? I would say the following, if I can beg to differ with you. The three tefachim represent the essence of a lulav. The lulav essentially has to be three tefachim. That's the shear of a lulav. The reason why the lulav needs a fourth tefach is engendered by the halach, the mitzvah of nanuin. It's not essential to the lulav. It's a hechetimtza, if you pardon the phrase, meaning it allows me, it facilitates my ability to fulfill the mitzvah of nanuim. I need the fourth tefach to fulfill the mitzvah of nanuim. Therefore, we're going to find in Poskim, for example, that if you don't find a lulav more than three tefachim, you should take that lulav. What will you be lacking? What will you be deficient in? The mitzvah of nanuim, but you will still obtain the mitzvah of lulav, meaning l'kachtem lachem, kapos tmarim. And if you ask me to identify and define kapos tmarim, three tefachim defines kapos tmarim. You see, according to Rashi, who identifies the fourth tefach as being the same three as the three tefachim, so basically it's one continuum, it's one unified fourth tefach. There's no stop in the middle, you know, it's not an asnachta, you don't take a deep breath, you've gotten to the third tefach, now, well, let's stop, and we have to go on, because the nanuim with the fourth tefach, Rashi identifies the fourth tefach with the first three tefachim. So I'm not sure how to go with Rashi. Could be that Rashi would reject everything that was saying. But what I am sure is that the fourth tefach, according to the Bryce in Masechta Nida, is an entirely different entity. Let me give you an example. Okay, but you have to be very, you have to have a really good imagination for this, okay? Imagine that you have a lulav that's four tefachim, okay? And you put a, let's call it a mechitza, some sort of barrier, that blocks your vision of three tefachim out of the four of the lulav. There's one tefach that rises above that barrier, okay? And you decide that you're going to worship, not you, of course, right? You're going to worship that lulav. By the way, when you worship a lulav, what halacha kicks in? Who remembers the key phrase? Ki tusei mechdas shiura. We consider it its omed l'sreifa, it has to be burnt. And therefore, it's considered as if you don't have the shear of the lulav, correct? So I take a lulav, and it's designated as an Asherah, as Avodah Zarah, again, all the different dinim, and so forth and so on. Kitusei mechdas shiura kicks in. It's as if it's already burnt, and the shear of the lulav is gone. But in this case, Rabosai, guess what? He only worshipped the fourth tefach. That's all he saw. Correct? So he couldn't worship the other three tefach. Again, you have to know the dinim of Avodah Zarah and Mechitzas, and what separates his Maisa of Avodah with the object. So which part of the lulav now needs sreifa? How much is that? One tefach. So you have to burn the fourth tefach. Now he takes the lulav and he uses it for the mitzvah of lulav. Does that lulav lend itself to a fulfillment of the mitzvah of ulakachtem lachem biyom harishon? The lulav has to be four tefachim. And one tefach is kitusei mechdas shiura. It's only with sreifa. What would you say? I would say it's kosher. Ha ha, you got it. You see? Now you're going to put me in cheirim because I said it was kosher. Okay. I'm taking a radical stand. Why does it bother me not? Why does it bother me not that the fourth tefach is omid l'sreif? Correct. And the fourth shear is what I need for nanum. Can I do nanum with the fourth tefach? Even if kitusei mechta shiura?
You can't.
You can, I'll tell you why. Because there are two concepts of a shir. One concept of a shir defines the essence. It defines the entity of the Chefetz Shel Mitzvah. If it doesn't have that shir, it cannot qualify as the Chefetz Shel Mitzvah. Then there's a different kind of a shir. And that different kind of a shir is what I call a Hechet Timtza. Hechet Timtza means I need that size for technical reasons in order to perform an action. So, for example, if I only have a lulav that's three tefachim high and that it ends right there, I cannot perform a maisa of nanuim with that lulav. But if the fourth tefach is needed for nanuim, but it doesn't define the essence of the chefetz shel lulav, then even though kitusei mechdas shiura applies to that fourth tefach, I can still fulfill the mitzvah of nanuim by shaking the fourth tefach. Because here the shiur doesn't define the essence of the object. It only is necessary in order to perform the maisa nanuim, and that I can do. The pella here is that the shear of a lulav has to reflect not only the mitzvah, the basic mitzvah of mida'ad bei nafik bei, of l'kicha, but it also has to reflect the additional mitzvah of nanuim. And this, by the way, makes sense according to the Rambam. I don't know if any of you remember what we discussed in the Rambam. The Rambam, when he talks about how to fulfill the mitzvah of lakachtem lachem, the Rambam requires nanuim. In other words, the kiyum nanuim, according to the Rambam, is part and parcel of lakachtem lachem. Not like other Rishonim who take Nanum and they put it into Hallel. Oz Yiranu Atzei Hayar. In other words, the way that you do Hallel is by fulfilling Hallel with Nanuim. No, the Rambam has Nanuim way back in his discussion of Perek Ches when he speaks about how to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Ulekachtem Lachem. The Lulav, therefore, has to reflect not just the basic mitzvah of Lekicha, which is called Mida Agbei, Nafik Bei, it also has to be reflective of the Kiyum Nanuim. The Kiyum Nanuim is an adjunct, but it still remains essential and part of the mitzvah of Lekicha. And now I come back to the Lulav. The lulav is, what shall I say, a tower house. Is there such a word as a tower house? No. It's a powerhouse, I guess. It's a tower.
Okay. Tower.
Tower of power. Okay. That's the tower, right? And how do you measure that tower? How much? How much is a tower? Like if I tell you the CNN building in Toronto, you know, towers above, I don't know, the United Nations, you know, you could this and that, right?
One kosher, one tefa.
No, a tefa.
One tefa.
You forgot Shmuel? Yeah, I mean, so, how much does the lulav have to tower above the Adasim of Earth? One tefa.
CNN tower.
Oh! Okay. All right. Now we got it all clear. Okay.
One tefa.
Yeah. When I was a kid, you know, the tallest building in New York was the Empire State Building, but then it became the Twin Towers.
It is once again.
Oh, it's finished?
No. Empire State Building, once again.
Say it again? What?
Empire State Building, once again, tallest building.
The
Trade Center is no longer there.
Yeah, I know, but what? I didn't hear that by something.
I said it's once again the tallest building. Empire State Building.
Oh, the Empire State Building, yeah. I thought you meant to say that once again the Twin Towers are back. I know they're rebuilding it, but
they're almost there.
They didn't start yet?
They're almost finished.
No, they're almost finished. So maybe it's already tall there, if I say, whatever it is. Anyway. So Rabbo said, when I tell you that something has to, according to the law of our religion, you know, the lulav has to tower above the other minim, what does that indicate? What does that reflect? What conceptually, what does that mean when you identify one thing, one object that has to tower above the others?
Chashivus,
correct. Chashivus. The lulav has the most chashivus. And this reflects itself in the Nusach HaBrach. Asher Kitshanim Mitzosim Tzivanu Alatius Lulav. Right, we don't mention the Adas of the Aravos. Even the Esrik doesn't get a mention. Doesn't even get a footnote in the Brach, because the Lulav is the most important in one. Why? What is it about the Lulav that we see in our Sugya that requires a certain Chashivus, which the Gemara measures as one Tefach towering above the others? What's the Chashivus of the Lulav?
Nanun.
Nanuim gives lulav a special role. And here I want to quote the Ravid. You may remember this Ravid, it was in the first year when we started lulav ha-gozel. The Mishnah says that a lulav ha-yavesh is possible. A dried up lulav is possible. Well, why is a dried up lulav possible? There are many, many shittas. Rashi says because Zekei Levi'an Ve'yu, Tos says because of Hadar. The Ravid has a very unique shita. He quotes a Yushalmi and he says the Yushalmi quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, Lo Amesim Yahaluka. A lulav hayavesh, which turns white, is a mess. It's considered dead. And the dead cannot praise the Almighty. Where do we find in the mitzvah of lulav Yahaluka? Where is lulav hallel? I read the pasuk. It says ulakachlem lachem b'yom harishon, etc., etc. I didn't see the word hallel. Exactly. Is the kiyum of hallel a lulav hayovesh is possible? And by the way, we're going to have a whole discussion about hadas hayovesh. Many rishonim hold that hadas hayovesh is kosher. It never actually turns white. It gets very dry, but it never turns white. And according to the Ravid, therefore, it's not subject to the status of misa, and you could still do hallel with it. As dry as it is, it still lends itself to Hallel. But the lulav, la mesim yaluka, becomes mace. And it doesn't lend itself to Hallel. The ikar of all the minim, the most significant of all four minim, as far as yaluka, as far as Hallel, is the nanuim, insofar as the nanuim plays the major role. I'm sorry, it's the lulav, insofar as the lulav plays the major role in the mitzvah of nanuim. Nanuim is oz yiranu atzei hayar. The atzei hayar is a reference to the lulav, And says the Rav, there's a special din that if the lulav doesn't lend itself to yahalu ka, if it's a mess because it turns so dry that it's white, then it's possible. You can't use it. You see, again, the lulav has a chashivus in the context of yahalu ka, that the mitzvah of lekachtem lachem has another piece to it, another part to it. It doesn't exhaust itself just in the ad beinafike, the maisa netila, but it has to be enhanced and upgraded to a maisa of yahalu ka, and that's what nanum is all about. And the lulav plays the major role. The lulav is superior to all the other medium insofar as it plays the major role in yahalu ka, and that's reflected number one in the bracha. The bracha is on the tilis lulav because the lulav has the chshivas of the additional kiyum of being in control, so to speak, in the driver's seat as far as yahalu ka, as far as nanum is concerned. Number two, the lulav has to be tower above the other three minim by one tefach. Number three, a lulav hayavish is possible, says the Ravid in the name of Yerushalmi, because it doesn't lend itself to Yahalukah. Okay, fine. Let's go on in the Gemara. The Gemara says the following: Market Isle, Market Isle. Okay, we add the vav to the Mishnah Kedel U Kedel Naneh, but we need that extra tefach. According to Shmuel, the extra tefach is in the gufo shel lulav all the way up to the top, including the anfei lulav. According to Rav Yochanan, it means the shidra itself has to be four tefach. Of course, Rav Yochanan therefore is being more machmir, because the lulav at the end of the day is probably going to be, what shall I say, six tefach. So what is the machlokas? Just on a very simple level, we don't have to be profound scholars here, between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. Yeah, that we said. But what lies at the root of the machlokas?
What is the chashivus? What is the beauty? What is the essence of the lulav?
Exactly. What is the essence of the lulav? Is the essence of the lulav the shidra? The anafim are embellishments, but they're not the essential part of the lulav. Obviously, the lulav has to be kibriyoso, as we've seen many times, and many lulavim that the nifritzu olav and nifridu olav and all those other cases where the anafim have been damaged and are impaired, and therefore the beauty of the lulav is lost. But that's only an addition to the lulav. The basic lulav, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is the shidra. Whereas according to Shmuel, the lulav is the ganze lulav, the entire lulav, both the shidra and the anuf. Go ahead.
In that itself, what you're saying, that the lulav is most, is the most important part of all the minims. And why is it that the esrog is the most expensive of all?
That's a great question.
Because they can get the money for it.
But you should know that it's not so difficult to get a kosher esrog. I mean, this year might be a little bit more difficult because of Shemitah, but...
Next year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Till we get to next year, right? The eighth year, you're right. You're correct. Thanks for correcting me. But what I mean to say is that to buy an esrog is this... You know, you don't have to be... 99.9% of the esrog. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but most esrog in the market are kosher. Lulav is not so simple. I mean, we've learned a little bit of that. We got a taste of it. The lulav is very complicated. I would have jacked up the price on a kosher lulav. But the trouble is that there's so many lulavim out there, and people think they're all kosher. Oh. Except for those guys who are running around with, you know, the little magnifying glass. But, you know, people want to be mahadir. They want to buy a beautiful esrog.
Yeah.
Like an Ushpizin, you remember that?
Yeah.
And how much did he spend? Was it like 1,000 shekel?
No,
the shekel was worth something. 1,000 shekel.
It became a lemon.
They cut it up and used it as a lemon. That was a chutzpah, but he controlled his anger. You know, that's the main theme of the book of the movie.
Why is the Esrog so important that it's usually put in the most beautiful, like in the
It's a good question. I don't know the answer to your question. I think we'll get to it when we get to the Esrog on Daf on the Gimel on the Bits. Okay? But right now, I don't know.
Alright.
You're anxious. Okay, I don't blame you. It's good. You're curious. You're anxious. So what else do we have? The Gemara says, Toshma. And the Gemara says, Shir Hadas V'Arova. Now, what does the word Arova mean, as we discussed earlier?
Also
Hadas. Yeah, it means Hadas and the Arova. And then it says, Shlosha. Ululav Arba. What does the word Lulav mean? As we discussed earlier, lulav means from head to toe. And it has to be arba. I mean, there's no adjective that's added here to the brisa that would say the shidra of the lulav has to be arba. My lav, I might assume, until I know otherwise, Bahari Olim, that I include the Olim in the Luav. So I mean, the Olim is part of the nature of the Luav, and therefore you only need four Tefachim. That's a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. Lo, the Gemara says that we have to kvetch in a little bit here. What the Brisa means is Levad Me'olim, because the word Luav, according to Rabbi Yochanan, means what? Shidra, because he identifies the essence of the Luav as a Shidra. Therefore, from his perspective, looking at it from where he stands, or he sits, when the Brisa used the word Luav, it's referring to the Shidra.
But what are we supposed to hear that we're saying
Lo, comma? You have to put a comma after the word
right.
Lo.
So when we say Lo, we're saying no, it's like Rabbi Yochanan.
Lo, meaning don't read it lulav from head to toe, but rather lo, read it lulav levad me'olim with the shidra.
So why do we decide Rabbi Yochanan in this?
Well, no, we're just trying to defend Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, whenever you have a braisa from Tanoim against an Amora, we do whatever we can, if possible, to bend over backwards to defend an Amora.
But then that'll go against another Amora. Shmuel.
Right, so Shmuel is going to say he's going to insist that the word lulav means the whole lulav. You know, we're not, you know, Shmuel's not throwing in the towel here. The Gemara is just trying to defend.
So this piece,
Rabbi Yochanan.
This piece, my love, this piece is basically this point. It's defending Rabbi Yochanan.
Well, in other words, it depends where you're up to. If you're up to my la bahari olin, then you're defending Shmuel.
No.
And kama, then the answer is lo to defend Rabbi.
The way it ends.
Levad
meal. Why is this piece ending with defending Rabbi Yochanan?
Because whenever there's a stira, a contradiction between a Mishnah, a Brisa, and an Amora, the Gemara is going to try to reinterpret the Brisa or the Mishnah in order to reconcile with that Amora. Because the Gemara can't tolerate that Rabbi Yochanan would be contradicted by Rosh.
Wouldn't that mean then there are Shmuel's and odd men out there?
No. The one who's saying these words, lo levad me olam, that is Rabbi Yochanan. Omar, add to the Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, add those words. Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, lo. That's not the way you read it. Not the way Shmuel, you read it. I'm going to read it differently, levad
me.
Correct. Gufa means we're going to go back to a Brisa and then see an expanded version of that Brisa, or we're going to read the Brisa more carefully. Shir hadas varav shlosh lulavar bar rabbi tarfin omer bi ama bas chamisha tfachim. This is what we call a tefach gadol. In other words, instead of taking an am of six tfachim, what we're going to do is we're going to take five tfachim, and each tefach is going to be 1/6 of an ama. So that means that if each of these five is 1/6, you're talking about 1.2. In other words, he's adding 0.2 in the size of the tefach. So now we're up to a larger tefach. So now Rabbi Tarfon is really upping the ante on what constitutes a shear, a kosher, a rava, etc. Now, that per se would be acceptable, and the Gemara is going to be happy with that, but rava did not understand Rabbi Tarfon in that way. Rava emphasized the chamishat tfachim here, and he thought that what Rabbi Tarfon had in mind is to set up a requirement in Arava of five tfachim, and Rava yells gewalt. He can't understand it. You know, three tfachim is hard enough. Now you're jacking up to five tfachim. Sharole mar. Mare means HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Shara means to be mochel him. Rashi expands on this. And let HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the master, forgive Rabbi Tarfon for saying such a thing. Rabbi Tarfon. Why? Because Hashta now, the way we understand it, Avos Shlosha, meaning Hadassim have to be three Tvachim, and Lomish Kachinon. We can hardly find Hadassim that are three Tvachim. As I said before, Hadassim are very complicated. Very difficult to find Hadassim Ksherim. And that's going to be the sugi here on the bottom of the page, Hadas Shota. You see that four lines up from the bottom? That's where we want to get to. Is Bas Chamisha Mibor? Now you're jacking up the ante. We require a Hadas. That's five Tfachim. Is that what Rabbi Tarfon means? Basically, you've thrown out all our Hadassim. We cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Lekachtem Lechem. Kiyos Rav Dimi Omer. Let me straighten out the record here. That's not what Rabbi Tarfon had in mind. But rather, Amma Bas Shisha Tfachim, take an Amma which is six Tfachim, that's called an Amma Beninis or a Tefach Benoni, so each Tefach is 1/6 of an Amma. Aseota Bas Chamisha. Now, divvy it up not into six Tfachim, but rather into five Tfachim. So each Tefach is 1/5 larger than a Tefach Benoni. So again, the relationship between a Tefach Gadol and a Tefach Benoni is 1.5 to 1. Meaning 1 plus a fifth. So if you multiply 5 by 1.5, you get 6, correct? So 1.5 is each tefach. 1.2, I meant to say. I'm sorry, I meant to say 1.2. What I meant to say was 1/5. That's why I said 0.5, right? So 1.2, which is 1/5, right, is 1.2 tefach in relationship to a tefach benoni. Okay? Same name, shloshal adas. So you take this 1.2 and you multiply it by 3 because you have to make, you know, the adas has to be made up of 3 tefachim. So you take 1.2 times 3 and you get 3.6, correct? 3.6. Vashar luluv, and then you have to add another tefach for the luluv. Kama havi, what are you left with for the 3 tefachim? Havilu talsa v'talsa chumshe. So you've got 3 tefachim plus 3/5 of a tefach, correct? Or 3.6 of a tefach. Beinani, this is called a tefach gadol, multiplied by 3 because you need 3 tefachim, is then Rabbi Tarfon is being machmir, but not so much. The Gemara thinks this is not, you know, beyond our ability. You know, we can add 0.6 of a tefach if that's what the chumra is, and we'll be able to swallow that pill. You're not adding 2/5 by adding 2 tefachim to the 3 tefachim and jacking it up to 5 tefachim. That's impossible. The Gemara says, "Kasha the Shmuel." We have a stira now between two statements of Shmuel. Hachamar Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel Shir Adas Rav Shlosha, and the assumption now is that when Shmuel says Shlosha, he's referring to a normal, average tefach, meaning a tefach beinani, which is a kula. For Hassam over there, I don't know what the word Hassam means. Does anybody know what the word Hassam means? I got stumped on this one. Rashi didn't say anything. Hassam over there. Where's over there? It is somewhere? Somebody mentions where it is? Maybe art school will tell you what Hassan means?
He just says in the name of Shmuel, the Allah follows Rebbe Tarfon.
But what does Hassan mean?
Yeah. Elsewhere. He just says.
Just elsewhere.
Stam,
very strange.
Paskins, like
I've never seen such a thing in a Gemara, Hassan. Honestly, a piece of the puzzle is missing in my book. Hassan means, you know, in a Mishnah, in a Brisa, somewhere, some sugya. And I just Hassan in the Velt around, you know, glad Hassan. I don't know, I got stuck over here. Rashi didn't help me. Omar Avun, Omar Shmuel, what did Shmuel say? Elsewhere, okay, we'll use the word elsewhere. Halacha kirabi tarfa, which means that 3 tvachim is not sufficient. I need 3 plus 3/5. That's a major, again, it's not the bombastic chumra of requiring 5 tefachim, but it's 3 and another 3 and another 0.6, right? 6/10 of a tefach. I mean, that's 6/10 of a tefach. What's going on over here? You're telling me Halacha is Rabbi Tarfon. You just publicized on the loudspeaker that you need 3 tefachim beinanim. Again, we have to add the word beinanim. So the Gemara says, lo duck. When Shmuel said 3 tefachim, he wasn't very careful about which tefachim. In other words, he was expecting the Talmidim to drill him. Okay, you just told me 3 tefachim, but which 3 tefachim? And he would have answered that Halacha is Rabbi Tarfon, we need 3 tefachim gedolim. The Gemara says that's not fair play. You've broken the rules. Because there is a principle called lodok, and it appears all over Shas, but it's restricted. It only goes l'chumra, not l'kula. Amor the Amrina lodok, when do you have the ability to accuse an Amor of not being medayeg? That's only l'chumra if in the worst case scenario somebody will misunderstand him. And add a chumra, nishkefel, it's not terrible. But Lakula, me, I'm reading a little duck that Shmuel would have said 3 tefachim, meaning 3 tefachim beinanim, and people would be machshir a hadas or whatever it is at 3 tefachim beinanim when it's not kosher, it's lacking the tefach gadol. That's not acceptable.
One second, did we say that Shmuel says halachas
Rabbi Tarfon? Correct. So if halachas Rabbi Tarfon, we have to add 0.6. of a tefach. It's right. Not 3 tefachim. It's 3.6 of a tefach.
Previously, is it a regular one?
Regular one. And the Gemara is accusing of low dock that he was loose about. He was laid back about. How can you do so? You're tripping up people. They're gonna take a das or an arav or a lulav that's 3 tefachim, meaning 3 tefachim beinanim, and it really doesn't fulfill the mitzvah because you need tefachim gedolim. So that doesn't sit well with the Gemara. He asked the Ravin. Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, and he had a secret in his pocket to reveal us that the tefachim of Rabbi Tarfon are not the tefachim gedolim, but rather tefachim ktanim. Omar, what is Rabbi Tarfon have in mind? Ama bas chamisha tefachim aseosa shisha. So you take an ama of 5 tefachim. And you divvy it up into 6 tefachim. And when you'd start with an Amma, 5 Tfachim, now you divvy it up into 6 Tfachim. So you reduce it by what? How much is he reducing the Tefach? Who remembers? He has it here. I'll read it to you in case you need it. He says the following. A Tefach cut, and he says, is 5/6 of a Tefach Beinoni. Right? So we take an Amma of 5 Tfachim and divide it up into 6 parts. Each Tefach will be 1/6 smaller than a Tefach Beinoni. So now if you're multiplying a Tefach by 3, so you get a half a Tefach, instead of it being 3 Tfachim, it's going to only be 2.5 Tfachim, because you're going to take that 1/6 and multiply it by 3 to get a half. Or as you would say, a half. Correct? I'm learning, right? A branch. Okay. Not a branch. A branch. Come on. Say it like the Brits say, or the Anglo-Saxons. Okay, fine. Right? You're teaching me, Ed. You're teaching me. Okay. So the Gemara says the following. Tzemen shlosha tfachi shlosha ladas vashar lululov kama havilahu trey upalga. It's only 2.5 tfachim. Sof kasha the Shmuel, but Shmuel says that you need 3 tfachim and not 2.5 tfachim. Lo dak. But now we can accept the principle of dak, that when Shmuel said 3 tfachim, in the worst case scenario, you would think he means 3 full tfachim, which we call tfachim beinanim. Okay, so you were more machmir, you didn't take a lulav or a dasin that would have been ksherim at 2.5 tfachim. Okay, hainu luchumra. He says, when do we say lo dak? That's only when it's luchumra. But one second, how do you read this? Just one second. Kasha the Shmuel lo dak. V'hainu luchumra lo dak. Now he was not being medayek by saying three tfachim. He misled us into be more machmir. The Amar Rabbi Shmuel Shmuel Allah Rabbi Tarfon, so that the Allah Rabbi Tarfon is a kula, because you can accept an arava that's only 2.5 tfachim. Okay. So he says lo dak luchumra. He says, Hainu Lechumra, where this low dak is Lechumra, meaning he wasn't careful because he misled us into being Machmir. And sometimes, again, when I use the word misled, I don't mean that he deliberately misled, but he means to say, if, in the worst case scenario, if somebody would be misled without questioning and trying to get to the bottom of it, he would be Machmir, and that's okay. Why would he be Machmir? Because in truth, Allah is like a bitarfin, and we only need a smaller Tefach. La halacha we paskin that the 3 tefachim are 3 tefachim beinanim, not like Rabbi Tarfon, which is either a kula if you go like the Gemara before Rav Dimi, or it's a kula according to Rav Dimi. I'm sorry, according to Ravin, I meant to say. If you go according to Rav Dimi, then we're being makil and we're reducing it to 3 tefachim instead of 3.6 tefachim. If you go like Ravin, then we're being machmir, because instead of 2.5 tefachim, we need 3 tefachim. And then Rashi says that the 4th tefach of the lulav is identical. It's the same. It's the same tefach beinoni.
The bottom line between Rav Yochanan and Shmuel is what?
The bottom line between Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel is whether or not the lulav has to be 4 tefachim up to the shidra, or has to be 4 tefachim up to the top of the lulav.
And Rabbi Yochanan says it's got to be from the shidra?
Up to the shidra. From the bottom of the lulav to the shidra has to be 4 tefachim.
Right. So how does this change in the picture? All this discussion about...
No, this is a new sugya. We started a new sugya after the words lo. Where was that? Just one second. Up till Toshma. You see the words Toshma? So you put 2 dots before the Toshma. Toshma is already a new sugya. No, I'm sorry, my mistake. Up to the word Gufa, right? The low. Do you remember Shaul, before we were hesitating about lo, comma, levad me olim? You find those 3 words that we discussed earlier? So after that word me'olim, now we have the word gufa.
Right.
That's already a new sugya. And that sugya of gufa is analyzing what tefach are we dealing with. The chachamim assume it's tefachim beinanim, which means you take an amma divided into 6 parts. Rabbi Tarfon, on the other hand, assumed it was a different kind of a tefach. And then the Gemara goes through all discussion, analyzing Rabbi Tarfon, was he talking about a tefach gadol or a tefach katan? But this whole sugya of Rabbi Tarfon and what size of a tefach are we operating with, that has nothing to do with the machlokas between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. The machlokas between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan is the size of a lulav in adding the 4th tefach. Does it have to be from the bottom of the lulav, we'll call it, right, the part that's attached to the tree, up until the end of the shidra, or could it be up until the end of the lulav, including the anuf? Correct? And now we start the Mishnah of Hadas. The Mishnah of Hadas is almost a repeat performance of what we saw with regard to a lulav. But the Gemara quotes a brisa, which really interests us, and that brisa wants to know, how do you know what exactly is the Torah referring to? I mean, the Torah doesn't use the word Hadas. The Torah uses the phrase Anaf Eitz Avos. And the Gemara basically postulates, based on this brisa, that Anaf Eitz Avos requires two conditions. Number one, it's got to be Anaf of Chofin Es Eitzo, which means that the stem of the Hadas is totally covered by the Anofim. It's not exposed. And the Gemara, based on that, is going to exclude Zesa and what was the other one? Right? The Ema Zesa, Bidin Avos, Vulek Ema Dulva, Bidin Anof of Chofim, or Dulva, whatever it's called, Chofin is Eitzo. And then the Gemara is going to have another requirement. It's not enough that the stem is completely covered. We also need that all the leaves on the same level, we call it the width as opposed to the length, but on and that width overlap one over the other. Exactly how the Gemara derives both of these conclusions from the words Anaf Eitz Avos, I do not know. I understand that Anaf Eitz Avos means Anaf of Chofin Es Eitzo. Okay? The Ezahu, and what fits that bill, that description of Anaf of Chofin Es Eitzo, that the leaves completely cover the bark or the stem? Havi Omer, you should know, Hadas, that's the Hadas. Good, I'm going to skip Zesa for a minute. The Ema Dulva, Rashi identifies that as a chestnut tree. He even gives you the old French, chestnir, I guess that's the same as a chestnut.
Castagna.
Okay, castagna. You know the French? All right, I'm impressed. If you're Canadian, I would know that you know French. The Brits also study French?
No, they were on holiday, used to have...
Used to what? Used to...
Good French.
The roasted chestnuts.
Oh, really? And that's what they call it to this day. The French call it to this day. Say it again, Castanier?
Castagna.
Castagna. Castagna sounds like a city in Spain. I don't know. Okay. So, what's the problem with this Castagna? So, here the Gemara introduces the following. Be'inon anof of chofin es eitzo. Well, that's a repeat performance. So, it means that just as we defined anaf eitz avos as anaf of chofin es eitzo, and therefore we produced the hadas, now we're going to exclude this castanier because it doesn't have that quality of anaf of chofin es eitzo.
Why did we assume in the first place it might be a candidate?
No, the reason it's a candidate is because of the Gemara that we skipped. So let me fill in the missing blank. You know, I'm going through, you know, step by step, what are the prerequisites for a anaf eitz avos. So again, I wanted to exhaust one, and then we'll go back to the other. So in terms of the one, we have something called anaf of chofin es eitzo. So hadas is in, but dulva is out, because dulva does not have the quality of anaf of chofin es eitzo. Rashi says it's not olav ritzufim. You don't have this continuous olav, meaning the leaves are not continuous, they're sparse, they're spaced one from the other, and therefore the eitz itself is exposed.
It probably okay. describes many such species.
But now Shalom, ask me what's the other basic requirement of hadas. Don't ask me how the Gemara knows this, but the Gemara has another identifying quality to anaf eitz avos, and that is avos. Okay? Now, I thought anaf eitz avos meant to say, as Rashi says at the very beginning of the sugya, she kulo anaf sha eitz mechupa bi'olin. So I thought the word avos means that it covers it. But now Rashi is going to tell us it's not enough that the Anufim cover the eights. They have to cover the eights and also have another quality. What's the second quality? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, Al Yidei Shem Asuyim Beklia V'Shokvin Al Apem. There's some sort of overlap of the leaves, not overlap to cover the eights that we have already. That's mechupa biolim, but we also have some sort of overlap in which the leaves cover each other. You know, there's some sort of braiding in which the leaves overlap one on top of the other. And the Gemara, in essence, is interpreting eights avos in two different ways. Now, there's the two different qualities that are indicated in the word avos. Number one, the word avos means chipui, it covers the eights. And number two, avos means that the anufim cover each other. Now, we're going to exclude a dulva because it's not chofin es eitzo. But then the Gemara says, but what about the ema zesa? Why does Gemara think that zayis is a good candidate for anaf eitz avos? And the Gemara says the following, and excuse me, Rashi says the following: kulo olin aruchim uritzufim. So if you're going to look at the olive tree, you're going to see that the stem of the olive tree is covered by long leaves that are continuous, that don't expose any part of the eitz. So therefore, the olive tree really fulfills, or the olive branch, we could call it, fulfills, again, I'm not giving you philosophy here. You know, you could say also, there probably are layers and layers of Kabbalistic meaning here to this Gemara, but on a simple level, the Gemara is postulating that if we interpret the word avos as being covering, as chipui, then guess what? A zesa does fulfill that requirement. So in other words, the Gemara at this point believes that there's only one quality that's required to fulfill the description of anaf eitz avos, and that means that there are long leaves that cover the eitz, and that applies to the case of the zayis. So the Gemara answers, the inan avos v'leka. Now the Gemara is introducing an entirely different description or definition of avos. Avos doesn't mean kisuya eitz. It doesn't refer to the length of the olim as they are continuous up and down the stem, but rather it relates to the relationship between the anufim one to the other. In the case of the zayis tree, each ola is separate unto itself. It doesn't form any sort of linkage or chain with the other anufim, and therefore the other olim, and therefore it's lacking in avos. And now the Gemara thinks that, wait a minute, if you're telling me that the word avos means this overlap and braiding of the anufim, then v'ema dulva. Dulva actually has that quality, namely, if you take a look at Rashi, Dira Eskil Dulva, after he gives you the French, he says, Kaluahu. It is actually braided. And the leaves of the chestnut tree, apparently, in the width at least, overlap, and therefore it's called avos. But the Gemara says, no, you misunderstood. We weren't substituting, we weren't undermining the original definition of avos. Avos does require chipui, and therefore we exclude dulva. We weren't meant to substitute, we were meant to add. And therefore, be'inan anuf of chofin es eitzo v'leka. So which species has both qualities of avos? It's avos in its relationship to the eights, and it's avos in relationship to the anufim, one or the other. That's only the hadas. Oh, that's not so. The Gemara says, I have an additional species which reflects both qualities of avos. It has the chipui and it has the klia, and that's called a hirduf. Again, nobody seems to tell me what a hirduf is. Maybe Otzko will tell me. What
is the stick that motion through the water by the Mara?
Really? Who's he quoting? How does he know such a thing? Say it again, oleander?
Oleander.
Well, I heard of oleander. Oleander is full of flowers, no?
Yeah, it's, like
it's a flower tree. So maybe the flowers, what the Gemara is saying is that these flowers are very thick and they overlap each other and they cover the stem.
The leaves themselves.
Oh, the leaves, not the flowers. Mm-hmm. Are they very long leaves and wide? Are they wide as well?
No?
They're narrow, but narrow enough so that there's some sort of...
Rashi on Pesachim 39a, Divrei Masna Hirdi, and Tosfos here, Divrei Masna Emet.
Yeah, okay.
Here there was a tree that was used by Moses to miraculously sweep the waters by Mara.
Okay. So why does Gemara reject Hirduf? And here we have Machlokas between Abaye and Rav. And this really boggles the mind. You know, the Gaon says that you can't go six blot in Shas without a Machlokas between Abaye and Rav. What are they arguing about? This I can't figure out. Omer Abaye, Abaye says, Racha Dachi Noam. That this Hirduf is full of prickly spines and so forth and so on. Rashi says that you'll be injured when you take this. Kotzim Biroshe Olim, that the tips of these leaves are so sharp that they dig into you, and therefore it doesn't fill the bill, the description of Drache Adarche Noam. Rava Amar Mehacha. Lips of Rava wasn't happy with Abaye. Ha'emes ve'ashalom ahavu. Rashi says, "Zelo eino lo emes v'lo shalom shelhu asui l'sam hamoves."
Poisonous
plant.
Right. So what are they arguing about? I mean, they're both excluding a hirduf. But Abai is excluding the Hirduf under the Drache Adarche Noam. Rav is excluding it under Emes Vashol Mehavu. I mean, it's a very strange Gemara.
Saying the same thing.
They're saying the same thing. They're both excluding and disqualifying the Hirduf. And the Machloka seems to be, well, what's the verse? I don't find that often in the Gemara that they argue about what the verse is and without any nafgamina la locha.
Bottom line is the bottom line. What's the verse?
Right. So let me, in order to, you know, again, we don't have that much time, but just in the next 3 minutes, just to soften the ground here a little bit. Again, what I'm going to ask you now, I don't claim that I have the ultimate answer, but I want to ask you the following. What are we saying about the Hirduf? A or B? Are we saying that the Hirduf doesn't belong to Anaf Eitz Avos, despite the fact that it has all the qualities thereof? It is not Anaf Eitz Avos. It just taint Anaf Eitz Avos. Call it something else, but it's not Anaf Eitz Avos. Or are we saying, no, Hirduf is Anaf Eitz Avos. It has all the qualities of Anaf Eitz Avos. But what are you going to do with this Anaf Eitz Avos? Called a Hirduf. You're going to shake it. And what are you going to end up with? You're going to end up with bruises, injuries, and you're going to violate the principle of Drache Adarche Noam. That's not called a beautiful Lekicha, which we would want to achieve. So I think maybe, and just to think out of the box a little bit, that this is the Machlokas Abaye and Rava. Abaye is not denying the question of the assumption that underlies the question of Ema Hirduf. He admits that Hirduf has all the qualities of Anaf Eitz Avos. If you ask me to define, give me a list and enumerate everything that fits into Anaf Eitz Avos, you'll find Hirduf on the list. Says Abaye, the reason why this a Hirduf is possible is because you cannot implement the paradigm idyllic Lekicha which the Torah has in mind, because in doing so you're contradicting the principle of Drache Adarche Noam. Rava comes along and he says, Ha'emes Vashalom Ehavu, this is not an Anaf Eitz Avos. And why isn't it an Anaf Eitz Avos? Says Rashi, because it causes death. And death is the opposite of a min lulav, or a min hadas, or whatever the dalad minim are. And where, Rabosei, did we have this concept?
Lo amesim yaluka.
Correct, lo amesim yaluka. that if there's some element of death involved in the Dalit Minim, then it can't be, it cannot be a candidate, and it cannot qualify as one of the Dalit Minim. So my nafkamina would be the following. Tosis is going to say here in Emes Vashov Nehavu that what if you add a hirduf, but you already have hadasim ksherim, and you add a hirduf? What issue is now going to arise? Baltosif. You're violating Baltosif by adding another min. So I would say the following. According to Abaye, there's no Iser Baltosif because it's another Adas. It's an Afetz Avos. You can add as many Adasim as you want. But if you go with Rava, and Rava is saying that this doesn't qualify as an Afetz Avos, it's a different min, then you would violate the Iser Baltosif. Okay, Rabosai, we'll stop here.